Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Full or part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
And here we go. It's the Media Project for another week on the Northeast Public Radio Network and around the country. Nice to be with you. I'm Ira Fussfeld of the Daily Freeman of Kingston, New York. Well, it is around the country.
No, in Nacogdoches, Texas, if they're still playing it. I don't know.
Well, we'll
and some other places,
I heard you on a local station in my market the other day on another program that comes out of this network. So I was very surprised because I thought I was going to hear my voice and it was only your voice. So I'll tell you about it later. But you never know. The short point is where you're going to be.
I have no idea what the hell you're talking about.
Okay, I'll tell you later. Well, that's Alan Shartok of WAMC and of the State University of New York. And also here today is Judy Patrick of the Gazette in Schenectady. Nice to see you.
Hey, it's nice to be here with you, Ira. First time.
Everybody thinks everybody in the business knows each other, and we just met Judy 10 minutes ago.
That was so sexist of you, Ira.
What's that?
When you said it's nice to see her.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's true, she's beautiful, mm-hmm. but the question is, when you say, it's nice to see you, mm-hmm. this is not something you say to people like me. You don't say, it's nice to see you. You get it?
Well, yeah, but I think you're right. I don't think I would say it's nice to see you, Alan, but not for the reason that you suggest. Well, here we are, and hopefully we're going to make some sense out of some of the media issues of the week. And I thought I'd lead with this one because it's not only a media issue, but it feeds into Alan's wheelhouse, which is politics. And this business with Harry Reid, the Democratic Senate leader, who gets up on the floor of the Senate and says that he knows and he's been told that Mitt Romney has not paid income taxes for 10 years. Of course, the Mitt Romney income tax issue has been in play for quite some time. But for someone as significant as Reid to get up and make that claim, citing unknown and anonymous sources, what apparently happened or what largely happened was rather than press Reid to demonstrate where he was getting his information,
right.
The reporters then ran to Romney and again put the onus on Romney. This is what Reid says. Why aren't you paying your taxes? Why aren't you releasing your taxes?
Yeah.
So the question is, did the media, those that chose to go that route, and apparently it was a lot of them, go the right route, or should they have pressed Harry Reid, which few of them did?
Well, why couldn't you do both?
Sounds
reasonable to me, but you know, this has gotten to be some kind of mud fight here between these two candidates. And, you know, if it works, by the way, some fair journalism group will look into it and say, you shouldn't have done that, Harry. And by that time, the smoke will have cleared and, you know, the damage will have been done. But clearly, Harry Reid is going to be one of those guys who takes the lead for Obama in the mud fight. And he's done a good job of doing that. And here's what he has to work with. And the media, of course, understands this, which is if you don't release your taxes, that raises the question of what's there. And so he hasn't done that. And therefore, there's a premise, which is what do you got to hide? And then you take it one step further and say, it's my understanding he didn't pay taxes for 10 years.
So mud fights are always interesting to watch and fun, but the bottom line is we need to find out what's really happening here and who's telling the truth and who knows what and hold them accountable if they say things that they can't back up with facts.
How do you hold them accountable, Judy?
Ask them the questions and print it when they don't tell you the answers or when they obfuscate.
Obfuscate, yeah, that's right. But you know, I've watched this over the years, and now that we have all of these not-for-profit groups that come up and they say, fact checker.
Oh, I know.
You know, fact checker. And they say, this ad was a lie. That ad was a lie. And these are not-for-profits that do it on both sides, and they do it on both sides, and nobody cares. Nobody cares. There's a little box that you guys print in your newspapers. You say, little box about from the fact checker. But who cares?
Wait a minute. Nobody cares that the newspaper is trying to fact check the claims that are in ads?
No, 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 Ira. You know what I mean. Stop trying to make less of me than I deserve.
Nice to see you, Ira.
No, I mean, here it is that you guys have done the right thing. You put the little box right in the newspaper, and nobody reads it. Or if they read it, they forget it, or they don't care about it.
Okay, and if we don't do it, and we print more pictures of Kim Kardashian and Kanye West, you'll say that the newspapers are feeding into the dumbing down of America by giving them what they want.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah, so we can't have it both ways.
I can have it both ways. You can.
I see.
You know, I had a sports editor who used to tell readers who call up and complain, I cannot read the paper to you. I can print it. It's your responsibility to read it. We're not going to read it to you.
I like that. I think I'll use it. I cannot repeat everything that was on the radio to you.
Well, I just think that, as Alan points out, Harry Reid made a masterstroke in terms of the politics, keeping this issue in front of the public, and the public is wondering, as Alan says, what does Romney have to hide? It just seems to me that the press had, in this instance, an obligation to go to the minority leader of the United States Senate, who says something from the floor of the Senate saying, I know I have been told that this guy hasn't paid taxes in 10 years, that he should prove where he got his information. At the same time, they're saying to Romney, why aren't you releasing more of your taxes?
Okay, well, let's take a larger, something that you folks don't usually do on the in the press. I mean, I'm a professor, so, you know,
I do it. You have a PhD, I hear.
Yes, and you don't.
No.
But here's the thing. You got the 1%. We all know it. You got the 99%. We all know it. The big fight, by the way, is over white males in the socioeconomic, lower middle class to middle class group. And they are leaning towards Romney right now. So in order to get him back, you've got to throw these bombs. And appropriately so. I think it's a legitimate issue, by the way, whether or not he paid taxes for 10 years as a rich guy.
Don't disagree.
Because it goes right to the heart of this debate between what makes the difference between many Democrats and many Republicans. Not all, but many. Who's in the 99%? Who's in the 1%? You get the 1%, the Koch brothers. They're spending a fortune in these states that are on the line, you know, Ohio and then Florida and the others. And so that gives them that edge. But here comes Harry Reid. He goes up there and says, well, and then the guy coming out of his little house in wherever is saying, you know, that ain't right. I pay taxes and they should pay taxes too.
Listen, we in the media know that the public does not like stories that have anonymous sources. And you're seeing fewer and fewer stories in newspapers citing anonymous sources. And so
I don't think that's true, by the way.
Yeah.
I think what you see is in the New York Times now, the rationale for why it's an anonymous source. So in other words, somebody in Serbia said to me, you know, said to the reporter, this guy is killing everybody and didn't want to be identified for fear of his family. So there's always that extra sentence now about why it's an anonymous source. But I think you still get an awful lot of anonymous
I think
sources.
There's less, Judy, would you not agree? There are fewer of those claims of anonymity than there used to be because the public was telling us they didn't trust that you weren't making this stuff up. So as it relates to Harry Reid, who we know is a partisan by definition, he is citing an anonymous source. I, for one, wouldn't want to know who that source is because I can't believe on its face that he is doing this other for any other reason than politics. If he's got proof, then we need to know who that person is. He's got to do better than
okay,
an anonymous source.
A couple of things. Number one, if you hear a sort of banging,
he asked me.
Yes, nice to see you. Nice to see you, Judy.
Yeah, no, that's right.
We can't hear
banging,
you.
It's Ira banging. I am so on the table. I'm so sorry, Judy. You've called me up short, and I deserve it.
Now she forgot what you
now
were
I forgot
say.
The question.
Yeah.
No, but I agree. You're seeing far fewer anonymous sources in the media. And in this case, Harry Reid is expecting us to trust him that he had some sort of great anonymous source. When
well,
we
of course he did in the Department of Treasury, probably.
Oh, man.
All right, then let's cite it.
Oh, he
Show
can't do that.
Because
then they yell, you know, that's not right.
Well, here's another guy, not just another guy, who has some criticism
Wait a
of
second.
The media. Yes, you're going
to... Judy's not finished. For God's sake, stop being cruel to Judy.
So when journalists use anonymous sources, we usually say this has to be very important to not tell the people where we're getting the information from. The person really has to be in a position to know. And we grill the reporters before they can use an anonymous source. I mean, there's a real strong reason. It's an important public issue. This would be an important public issue, but Harry Reid's not a journalist, and I'm not sure an editor grilled him before he released it.
And with all due deference to you, Judy Patrick of the Gazette, I have to, you know, wonder whether when you grill your reporters as to what happened on the Board of Education last week, it rises to the same thing, you know, as a national story with a Harry Reid or our intelligence guy. Gathering capacity. I mean, I don't mean to put what you do.
But I say the ethics at the Daily Gazette of Schenectady should be the same as the ethics of the New York Times. We're all in the same business, and I think the rules apply across the board.
Pish posh. That's so nice. Maybe I can get the Journalism Society to give you an award for those lovely remarks. But you know that you can tell who somebody comes and says, Mrs. Cohn, we know Mrs. Cohn on the Board of Education said this in secret. Then, you know, who cares? You're a reporter. Yeah, you go back there and you find out who that and tell who that anonymous source is. I'm so sorry, but I don't agree with you.
Well, the press is in a particularly difficult position this cycle. It's always in a difficult position, but already people are calling this campaign the dirtiest one ever. Both sides claiming that political advertising from the other side is not only inaccurate, but false, flat out false. And as we continue with this, we, the gatekeepers, or however you want to describe us, are going to be reporting this these things, and there's going to be some onus on us to clarify what is right and what isn't right.
Right. I think journalism has never been more important than in an election campaign, especially this one, where the campaign is one thing, but the reporting and what gets in the newspaper and what gets aired on the television and on radio is really important. You got to look past the ads. You got to look past the jargon and the political rhetoric, and that's what journalists are supposed to do.
So wait a second now. This is fascinating. You realize what you both said fatuously. You're comparing yourselves and your power to that of the, I mean, it should be, I'll agree with that. To that of the Koch brothers and their billions of dollars that eventually will find their way into millions, I should say, of dollars that will find their way into these campaigns. You really think that the newspapers have that kind of power, that what we see on the Channel 6 news every night as they buy all the time is in any way comparable? It's not.
You know, information is powerful. That's what it is. And if it's the truth and powerful, and it's even more powerful, it's not necessarily the press. It's getting the real information out there. You see that with Twitter and social media all the time. Getting real solid information out there is the most powerful thing of all.
Okay, I was wrong.
Let's save that.
No, that's all right. I agree with you, but I do stick to my point, which is that all this money is.
But, you know, another letter writer wrote, I'm not going to read it because we've rehashed the subject, but we talk often on this program about the he said, she said nature of journalism. Mm-hmm. And again, here we have during this campaign, we're going to get a lot of, and we've already gotten a lot of he said, she said, and the press is in the position of either reporting it and just letting it fly out there or reporting it and trying to put it in some sort of context and describe whether he or she is in fact correct. And we're doing it in the most politically partisan charged era, and I think in the country's history, so that many people, depending on your point of view, are going to be inclined to disagree if they think you're an outlet that's typically not reporting from your point of view or the opposite way. So it's a very difficult circumstance because I think most of us at papers like Judy's, papers like mine, most newspapers, most radio stations are trying to do the right thing, trying to report it as accurate as they can. We're not Fox News. We're not MSNBC. And a lot of people in this country now are not inclined to believe us either.
You know what we do here at WAMS? We have and always have a program called Congressional Corner, in which we give over, I do it usually, but not always, 10 minutes. Every day, a different congressperson or somebody who's running against the congressperson comes on and gives their views. And for the most part, I like to allow them to do it without my deconstructing the narrative. See, that's a lot of political science talk that they are giving, because I think people should hear them in their own voice. And I think that's something that a newspaper can never really do.
But when you do that, your mail often is, how come you didn't challenge so-and-so on this?
Yeah,
you must be in the tank for them.
Sure.
And that's part of the problem of this partisan, the hyper-partisan era we're in.
Yeah. I had a guy write me a letter last week. I'm not going to, of course, use a name. And he said, you guys get these letters all the time. How come you didn't print my letter to the Legislative Gazette? I'm the publisher. I have nothing to do with what letters go in there, believe me. And this guy apparently writes all the time. Mm-hmm. And you didn't print my last letter. I know it's because you're in the tank for Governor mm-hmm. Cuomo, who probably threatened to take your money away. I mean, it was just so outrageous a lie that you just wonder, what is it that makes this kind of contentious relationship with the press, with a radio station, with a newspaper, that somebody would be so frustrated that they would make that kind of a lie up?
You know, the interesting thing there, think about this. At least they cared enough about your station to reach out to you, to make the call, to write the letter. I'm always grateful that someone will call up and complain to me, at least, and then they are the magic word engaged. At least they
care
about your
station. That is so goody two shoes.
No, but you know, that's accurate.
There's one thing you are, it's goody two shoes.
No, but you know, a lot of newspapers would when I used to be an editor and we would talk about various and sundry things, and somebody would ask me, do we get many letters to the editor? And I said, yes, we can't print them all. We get so many. Sure. And he says, oh, isn't that great? We sometimes have trouble generating letters. And to Judy's point, if people are caring enough about your publication that they want to be in it and they want to respond, that's a good thing. And now that's extended to the digital world, where our comments, many of them anonymous, as we've discussed here, but people do want to get part of the forum. They do want to be engaged with it. That's
good. I suppose.
You suppose. All right. This is The Media Project. I'm Ira Fussfeld with Judy Patrick and Alan Shartok.
Why did I go last?
This is The Media Project with Alan Shartok, Ira Fussfeld, and Judy Patrick. This is The Media Project with Judy Patrick. Here we go. A variation of something that newspapers in particular are very well aware of, and that is when to disclose a source. This is sort of a different issue with Harry Reid. But the famous now Twitter and the ubiquitous Twitter, somebody who subscribed, has an account, posted something suggesting that he or she was going to stage an attack at a Broadway show, where a Broadway theater where Mike Tyson is currently having mm-hmm. a one-man show. And it suggested there was going to be a Colorado kind of shooting there. The police got wind of it, and the police wanted Twitter to reveal who the person was who wrote the tweet.
Damn right they should.
Well, and initially Twitter did not want to do that. It finally, in fact, did. Is that a cut and dry? Should that decision have not taken them more than 3 seconds to make? Or is this at all similar to the kinds of things that newspapers have used or employed the Shield Law, for example, to protect their sources?
Ms. Patrick,
you know, that
first.
Was a real, really, really interesting case because, again, it's not cut and dried. But in this case, those tweets, there were a series of them, and it sounded like this person really could be serious. And it was an issue where the public was at risk. And I wouldn't have, if I ran Twitter, I probably wouldn't have had a problem disclosing who was writing that.
Now, of course, if one is a student of constitutional law, you know that the great First Amendment controlling case in there is, you know, freedom of speech, but you don't have the power to yell fire in a crowded theater. This was fire in a crowded theater, if there ever was one, literally and figuratively.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if I don't disagree with you, but I'm trying to relate this to press and
you
print
guys
press.
Are the same all the time. I'm sorry. I have to interject right here and tell you, you're always, you know, no matter what it is, the press can't be.
No, but you didn't hear me out. I'm trying to determine if we got a letter sent to us and we knew who the letter was from, alleging the same kind of potential crime, would we have instinctively not wanted to give it to the cops because we don't work for the cops? Or is the correlation between that and what happened with Twitter the same?
We would have had a real serious discussion about it before we did it. I don't think we automatically in the newsroom would ever turn anything over, but the bottom line is we don't want people to get shot in movie theaters either. But there are all sorts of gradations here because there have been other instances where law enforcement officials want other things from Twitter, like Occupy movements. They want people identified there, and I don't think it's our job to help the police prosecute cases like that.
So it's never black and white.
Never.
As we
it's
said
all shades
in last,
of gray.
That's just what I was going to say. Just like we discussed last week, it's shades of gray. Yeah.
And as it relates to Twitter and the digital world, there's this whole new world emerging where this is the sort of thing that's going to come up more so than it is right now.
I mean, it's always a matter of balancing. At the point at which the government has a right to censor, the press, you know, you don't have a free press. Yes. And we just read something, didn't we, Ira, this week, in which research has shown that countries with less censorship are more likely to be happy.
Right.
Countries.
I was just going to say a survey found that the more press freedom a country enjoyed, the higher levels of life satisfaction or happiness of its citizens intended to be.
Who paid for the study?
This was done
the
by...
The Newspaper Association.
It was done by something out of Michigan State and sure. Edson Tanduck Jr., whomever that person or firm is. But, you know, what happens whenever there's a revolution, depending on which side you are, the first thing that the government will try to do is shut down the media.
Take the radio station. You know, there was a time, I don't like to talk about this too much, but there was a time that George Pataki was so annoyed with WAMC that they changed the law so that only WAMC didn't get the state reimbursement. Perhaps you've heard that story before.
I have.
And I went on the radio and said exactly that. You know, when the communists came to town, the first thing they did is take the radio station. When the fascists, that's what got them mad at the governor's office. When the fascists came to town, the first thing they did was to take the radio station. If you don't want George Pataki to have your radio station, send me the money right now. And we had a one-day fund drive. So, yes, people are aware what the potential here is.
Now, let's talk about something that's not always so dear to my heart in my role at the newspaper, and that is the finances of newspapers.
Uh-huh.
We've talked about paywalls here. Judy and I were talking about Schenectady's successful circumstance with paywalls, and I'm talking about our digital editions. The New York Times is now reporting that it has more than 530,000 paying subscribers to its digital editions.
That's great.
And it credits that plan with a consistent increase in circulation dollars. So their experiment seems to be working, at least in the short term, in filling revenue gap that it was suffering as a result of decline in print advertising.
Well, yes and no. The no on that is that they still haven't made up the amount of money that they would have had all those people who were online and paying to be online were buying the newspaper. Are you following me?
I am.
Yeah.
Right, but that cow's left the barn.
That horse
has left the barn.
Yeah, but again, the debate that I've been raising, because it's our policy, and that's why I was interested in talking to Judy, who believes that the experiment in Schenectady is working quite well. Our position
is... Well, the experiment in Schenectady is they have a paywall.
We have a paywall. We've had one for several years. We're one of the first papers to have a paywall. Most of the content on our website, you have to be a subscriber to read. You can see a lot of stuff for free. But as a result, we have offer a combination. As a result, we've got 20,000 of our print subscribers who also pay us an extra 50 cents a week to have access to our website. So we are slowly convincing our readership that, yeah, they need a subscription to our online edition. And we try to give them as much as we can online extra to make it
That's fascinating. So that means even if they have a subscription to the paper, they have to pay extra to get it online.
Correct.
Amazing.
Then, of course, my question was and is, to what extent, if at all, does that impact the advertising flow? Is the paywall, as successful as it is it generating more viewers to the website than when the website was free? Now, I guess I heard you say your website was never free.
Well, it was free for a short amount of time, and we got tons of hits, but it didn't really matter to advertisers if I had 20,000 hits from California, because those people in California who were coming to our website weren't going to go to their grocery store and buy that week's beef special.
But Ira's point is well taken. Assuming that a lot of the people are from your area, are the advertisers who are willing to put money into the printed page willing to put the same money into the digital area?
Yes. My subscribers are committed to our paper because they pay to go
And
there.
You're telling me the advertiser, you're getting the same advertising revenue on this that you would have had on the...
I'm not the advertising guy.
Well, I think, again, we've said it before, the way that Judy's newspapers and others are doing it is maybe the right way long term, and the way that we're doing it, which is no paywall, may be the right way, and neither of us know for sure, right? The sample is too small. And we'll see. But if there's a saving grace, if it's a misery loves company thing, I'm going to close by telling you that magazine subscriptions are way down, particularly newsstand sales, and it's led by women's magazines. So the magazine industry is not immune from what's going on.
Does that make you feel better?
In a perverse sort of way. And that's the way we're going to have to end the program. That's the Media Project for this week. I'm Ira Fussfeld with Alan Shartok and Judy Patrick. Thanks for listening.
Raptors by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known.
floor. I meet politicians and grafters by the score. Killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk. Pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it. It's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.